BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello, this is the Smart Consumer Podcast with me, Olive Clancy.
And me, Simon Hoban.
Today, we're talking about houseplants. They're green, literally, but also good for the environment because they absorb carbon from the air, and that's something we all want more of to tackle climate change.
Yes, we're going to tell you about some new research that shows houseplants may not be as green, actually, as we thought, but they still look good in a photo, don't they? So much so that there's more than 2.4 million posts tagged with hashtag houseplant on Instagram.
And even the Royal Horticultural Society says it's expanding its houseplant offer because of the social media interest.
Yeah, and I kind of am new to this, but I picked up on all the chat in the office about them and thought, OK, I need to get into this world. And at the start, it was mainly just aesthetics. I wanted the house to look nicer, so I thought I'd get a few plants. And looking online, I came across the peace lily, which looked lovely. Also a spider plant. But it wasn't just how they looked. They also had apparently purifying properties. And I thought, this is quite interesting. I was always a bit of a wheezy child. And I thought, maybe this will help with the air quality in the house.
And did it?
I can't say I noticed any difference. But that's what we're going to get to with the science of
this,
aren't we?
It is where we're going to get to. I mean, plants get a load of credit for cleaning the air. Living walls are a big thing in the UK.
Yeah.
You know, where there's huge walls covered in plants.
Yes.
And they're supposed to absorb carbon. The National Grid has got the biggest one in Europe in Warwick. And there's a planning application in to build an even bigger one in London using 400,000 plants.
Wow.
It is huge.
Yeah, there is. The caveat to all this is new research out from Drexler University in the US that says that plants might not be as green as we think.
Yeah, and it's really disappointing for those of us who thought we were helping the environment. I talked to the man who did the research. He's Dr. Michael Waring. He's Associate Professor of Architectural and Environmental Engineering.
What we did is we reviewed the literature on whether plants would have an impact on indoor air quality or not. And then we reported our results, which are that we don't think that plants have any real impact on indoor VOC concentrations.
How many studies are we talking about? How much work did you look at?
There were 12 studies over the last 30 years, I believe 196 different plant studies on VOC removal, volatile organic compound removal by plants. And so what most of these researchers did is they would take a plant and they would put it into a chamber. And so they would report how the plant removed VOC and at what rate in a bunch of different ways. And so what we did is we tried to figure out how many plants it would take to compete with air exchange operating at one air change per hour, which just means that every hour, all the air inside your building is replaced. And that's a very reasonable air exchange rate. And so we concluded that if you take the average or median value of all the data in literature, it would take something like 10 plants per square meter to be able to compete with the air exchange mechanism that's already occurring. So an infeasible amount of plants, essentially.
How did the myth arise, do you think, in the first place?
I think that what happened was there was an original study in 1989, which was NASA-funded, which if you look at a lot of the articles and popular things that appear on the internet, this is something you'll see over and over again, that a NASA-funded study showed that plants could improve indoor air quality. People took notice of this study for some reason, and it just began to self-perpetuate all over the internet. I mean, I think this is something that people have just repeated without really questioning. And I think for the common public, that makes a lot of sense, because if you think of a NASA-funded study as having credibility, which most of us would, then it makes sense that you could just take those results and potentially, you know, write an article about it for your website or something like that. And I think that's mostly what's happened.
Here in the UK, we're very keen on living walls. We've got the biggest one in Europe and we've got plans for the second biggest in Europe as well. Are those living walls doing any good for the environment, do you think?
I have seen some evidence that living walls, or actually even just rows of trees or rows of hedges or things, can remove particulate matter air pollution, because the large leaf area will intercept those particles and the particles will deposit. And so if you're able to smartly plant a row of trees or hedges between a source of particles, such as a busy road, and somewhere you don't want particles, such as a school playground or some other sensitive type environment, then I have seen enough evidence out there that I think that can reduce that type of particulate matter air pollution. Now, with regard to VOCs, I am skeptical that any of these living walls can remove VOCs, largely for the same reasons that plants don't do much, is that they may remove a little bit, but I think that if you look at the scale of the wall or the hedge compared to the total urban environment, the concept that the plants are going to have any measurable impact on average VOC concentrations in an urban environment. I'm suspect of that. I'm skeptical of it.
It's all bad news for plants then, isn't it? Do you think people will be giving them up?
You know, there is research showing that plants can have positive psychological impacts. Living next to green spaces can promote human well-being. You know, plants can make you feel good. It's nice to tend them. They can have many positive benefits. We just wanted to point out that cleaning your indoor air is, we think, very strongly not one of those benefits.
Dr. Michael Waring, now, does knowing you'd be better off opening a window than getting a houseplant make you feel differently about your peace lily?
It does. After all this time, that's all I needed to do. It was just simply open the window. Yeah, it is disappointing. I mean, I always wondered, actually, when I was buying it, whether this was true or not. I mean, there's a bit of placebo going on here, and maybe I just kind of convinced myself that I was feeling a bit better. I mean, I didn't notice any real difference, I have to say. I wasn't breathing any better.
Dr. Waring did tell me, though, that there is evidence that plants do improve well-being. So yeah. You may be feeling better.
Yeah, and the place looks nicer, so that must have an effect too, just on my general mood. Yeah. So on that level, yeah, maybe they work. I mean, it's still going, it's still alive. Do they go right through the winter, Olive? I don't know.
They certainly do.
Really?
Yeah. They go for a long, long time and grow big.
They don't need much maintenance either, I've noticed.
No.
Which is my kind of plant.
Yeah.
But given actually that a lot of the places that I looked at were actually marketing them as having these purifying properties. So the supermarket that I eventually went to buy them, they were in a little section around that, you know, purifying plants.
I remember you coming in and telling us that.
They were labelled in that way. So whether or not they'll have to drop that now will be interesting, and whether concomitantly that would affect plant sales as a result.
Well, I wondered about that too. So I went to meet Aman Ozarak, who runs a plant shop called Just That Plant Shop in Stockport. Here she is.
I would say my customer is a happy split of male and female, aged between 25 and 34, although we do get parents bringing in their younger children who want to buy a really small cacti.
They must watch it grow.
Watch it grow while they're doing a project at school and stuff like that.
Why do you think we've gotten so back into plants? I mean, they kind of went out of style for a while.
I think for a long time, it was very heavily pushed that we should shop online and we weren't going into shops. You know, everything should be bought online. And, we're in this transitional period of green living. It's become harder to get a mortgage, so people might still be renting. And, you know, with that, you can't really, you know, decorate the property you're in. So, you know, a big statement plan can just wow a room. So I think there's a lot of that going on.
This statement, wow plant. Yes. I would like a statement wild plant. Right, okay. What do you recommend? Show me your statement, your top statement wild plant.
Well, it's the giant monstera with the moss pole, really.
These are the ones that are such a wow on Instagram as well.
Yeah, there's Monstera Monday, which is celebrated a lot on Instagram.
This is cheese plant.
Oh, the wild plant in this shop, let me tell you about this one, is the variegated monstera.
Oh, wow, that's gorgeous.
It's small, stripes of white within the green. It's a rare plant in terms of house plants. And
so not everybody on Instagram's got this
you
one.
You can't get this. They're quite hard to get. So that little piece there is worth about £150.
But could you buy a little, or could you get a little one of those? And how long would it take you to grow?
So, yeah, you could take a little part of the cheese plant and you could propagate it in water. And then you could watch it grow. It does take quite a long time to propagate. And now that's probably about 6 months. So it's a long process, but it's a giving process.
Yes,
you know?
None of this is quick results, but it's sort of mindful.
Yes,
you're supposed to get involved with the process.
Yes.
Tell me, how did you fall in love with plants?
I spent like 10 years travelling on tour because I managed bands and DJs. And through work, I found myself in Australia, in Melbourne. So I was just hanging around in Fitzroy, a really nice sort of independent area of the city, and noticed all these nurseries and plant shops and just this really sort of nice green aspect to sort of shopping. And yeah, I kept going to this one shop called Fitzroy Nursery. I must have visited about 3 times. I was just kept like being drawn to it. And then I got back, and before I know it, I'm on the internet ordering 100 tiny cacti off this grower and put them outside my office. And people just started buying them. And then I just wanted more.
I want to ask you, there's this research from the States that says that houseplants are maybe not as good for the environment as we thought they were. Maybe they're not absorbing as much chemicals. I mean, they're lovely and they are green. They're doing a little bit of good, but not as much as we thought. Do you think it matters to people who love plants?
I don't think it matters too much, because what people are getting from it is quite a few things. You know, they're getting the aesthetic of the plant, they're getting the sort of nurturing of the plant, and I think that will just overcome any research, really. And I think there's just such a part of this new world of social media, this aesthetic world. So the plant is an aesthetic, plus the plus points of the green and all that. So I think, you know, the younger generation, it really resonates with them having these beautiful green objects around them.
Emma Nosorak. Well, Olive, did she have anything that you hadn't seen before? Anything
she
new?
Certainly did. Yeah. Now, I have a monstera. Monstera, she calls them. Monstera. Do you know those? They're Swiss cheese plants. They're beautiful. Right. You will have seen them.
Yes, yeah.
They're
a
big leaf with kind of holes all over them.
Yes, I know that.
Well, Emma had this gorgeous variegated one. Now I want one. But it was £150 for a really little one, so I resisted.
Yeah, and I do wonder now, hearing this, whether or not I will buy any more. Because the purifying properties of it was an added bonus. It was something I was thinking about, although I wanted to improve the look of the house. That was the main thing, but it was a nice added extra.
And it's now true. You really want to be looking after something else for no good end except the way it looks?
Exactly. They do take a bit away. And now that I know that it isn't helping with that at all, I don't know if I'll buy any more. Some of my enthusiasm's gone.
Well, it might start showing up in sales, but interest in houseplants have always been cyclical anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. I associate houseplants with, I guess, the 1970s.
Yeah.
My mum and dad used to have a lot of them too. I mean, have they been in fashion before that then?
Yeah, they were. They were really big in the Victorian era. And then they were very popular for much the same reasons as today. They were seen as being in touch with the environment, bringing in the outside, the Industrial Revolution, and everything was very smoggy. They were considered naff in the 30s and then came back in the 50s. And I know all about this because I talked to the design historian, Theo Inglis, about it. He's a graphic designer by trade, but he got interested in houseplants while he was researching his book, Mid-Century Modern Graphic Design.
One of the first times when it became kind of popular was in the mid-19th century, thanks to the Industrial Revolution, linked to an anxiety about urbanisation and the lack of nature in people's lives. So there were calls to bring plants inside to kind of give people a connection with nature and the natural world. People worried about air pollution and dust and the lack of nature in lives and the lack of greenery caused by urbanisation.
And so when did they go out of fashion?
They remained popular throughout the Victorian era and into the early 20th century even. Things like ferns and the Aspidistra especially was one of the most popular houseplants and became really iconic and popular, partly because it was almost indestructible and was one of the few plants that could deal with the air pollution in people's homes, so from gas fires and coal fires and that kind of thing.
We never quite fell back in love with Aspidistra, did we? It's never really been popular again, has it?
I think George Orwell is partly to blame for that, because in 1936 he wrote a satirical novel called Keep the Aspidistra Flying, and he used Aspidistra as a kind of symbol of middle-class bourgeois conformity. It became a bit of a sort of joke and a symbol of Victorian conservatism.
And then the next boom you've been charting, I mean, through graphic design and things, was the 1950s, wasn't it? Tell me about that.
Yeah, I think the 1951 Festival of Britain was a major factor in the popularity of houseplants in Britain. British designers were mainly inspired by Scandinavia and America, where houseplants were already popular. And a lot of the exhibition spaces on the South Bank featured lots of tropical plants, including one of Terence Conran's first pieces of furniture, which was a kind of long planter filled with houseplants. And through Habitat, he kind of promoted houseplants throughout the 60s and 70s.
Do you think the knowledge that houseplants aren't as green as we thought they were will put us off them?
I don't think there's necessarily any environmental reasons for most people's buying of houseplants. I think it's kind of more to do with showing your interest and appreciation of nature rather than thinking that they're doing anything to help climate change, for instance.
So you reckon we'll just go right ahead and buy them?
Yeah, I think the functional side of it, the kind of air purification, is maybe a secondary consideration anyway.
Theo Inglis. And that's it from the Smart Consumer Podcast. We'll be back next week with another one, so make sure you subscribe on BBC Sounds.
Smart Consumer is made by us, the team who make Radio 4's consumer affairs programme You and Yours. It goes out every weekday at 12:15.
And if there's a topic you think we should look into, email us at youandyours@bbc.co.uk.
Thanks for listening.